history makers, frauds and fakers, ladies of renown. Good ones, bad ones, quite a few mad ones lived in Sydney town. There were fascinating characters, convicts, barristers, servants of the crown. Con men, strong men, all the wrong men, there's a ton of them and every one of them lived in Sydney town.
Now on Afternoons, Sydney Siders with Jim Haynes.
Here he is. Jim's with me on this Anzac Day. Jim, good afternoon.
Hello, Michael.
Thank you for coming. And oh, by the way, in the football, Warriors 12, Gold Coast 0. Warriors now 12, Gold Coast 0. We've only had 10 minutes. Not looking good for the Queensland team, anyway.
No.
All right, Sydney Siders, we always look at some famous characters, some of them colourful, some of them made wonderful contributions, others we're only learning about sort of now. But being Anzac Day, it is a military story that we have today, and it's the story of Oliver Hogue, but he was better known as something else, wasn't he?
Well, he was known as Trooper Bluegum.
Trooper Bluegum.
He wrote a lot of articles, and they're really good. I've read just about everything that was written at Gallipoli, because I wrote a play called We Were There, and I used all the words in the play were actually written by people who were there.
Yes.
And he, because he was a journalist with the Sydney Morning Herald, his accounts are the best. And he wrote them in an interesting way. He wrote profiles of people, and he just, you know, so he'd write something and the Herald would, you know, obviously ran the articles, but then they all became books. And one book was called Trooper Bluegum at the Dardanelles.
Yes.
And the other one was called Love Letters of an Anzac. And that's really interesting because Oliver never married. Whether he had a girlfriend called Bonnie Jean, all the letters were addressed to Bonnie Jean, I don't know. Whether she was fictional, because he did have a flair for writing in really interesting ways. He had a twin sister, Amy, but he wrote them as love letters.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, just fantastic. I'll just read you a couple of bits.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is called Love Letter 19. And it's just got my Bonnie Jean, so far so good. I'm still alive and kicking, I frankly admit. It's due more to good luck than good management. We've been here at Anzac for a week. And then he goes on and he just chats away, you know. And people will be reading these in the Sydney Morning Herald. Norman Jeffries was killed yesterday. You remember him. He was the last man to join the brigade. Came all the way down from Queensland. Brought his own horse and just got in at the last minute. One of the best men in the regiment. And that's how he wrote. And it's interesting that you were talking about Glebe.
Yes.
Because Oliver Hogue, now wait for this, he is a true, absolute true Sydney Sider. He was in the Light Horse and he grew up in Glebe.
He's in the Light Horse.
He was in the Light Horse.
But he grew up in Glebe.
He grew up in Glebe. He was a very good horse rider.
Yeah.
He was a terrific rifle shot. He was a very good cyclist. And that's where he went to Forest Lodge Public School.
How about that?
And it reminds us that back then you could live in the city and be a horseman. I mean, I grew up in the South Sydney area around Mascot, Randwick, Rosebery, Botany, and there were horse stables everywhere and racehorse stables in people's backyards. Les Bridge, who just won the Doncaster the other day, you know, there were lots of people like Les and his father, and they had stables in the backyard and they raced them at Rosebery Racecourse, Kensington Racecourse and so on. So, yeah, he was born in Glebe, went to Forest Lodge, and he was in the Light Horse.
And it was probably the Glebe back then, wasn't it?
Probably, yes.
When did they drop the bit from?
I don't know. I mean, the Glebe is an old Anglican English word, which means the area owned by the church.
And it was.
It was, yeah. And they rented all those houses, made a bit of money for the Anglicans. The Catholics were making most of it, but the Anglicans had to get a bit somewhere. Anyway, look, he... he didn't go straight into being a journalist. He worked as a travelling salesman, and reading his writing, and he had the gift of the gab, I reckon he'd have been a pretty good travelling salesman. He joined the Sydney Morning Herald in 1907 as a journalist, and he applied for the job. When they advertised, they wanted an official historian for World War One. He applied for it. Well, he was a journalist, and he put it in, but he didn't get the job, so he just enlisted as a trooper. With the Light Horse, and off he went. He went left Sydney on the HMAT, which is His Majesty's Australian Transport, Suavik, in December 1914. And the Light Horse weren't among the first to go to Gallipoli. They stayed in Egypt. But when they heard, a lot of the Light Horse divisions, when they heard about the, you know, the original landing and the how horrible it was, they volunteered to leave their horses behind and go as infantry. And not a lot of people know that, I suppose. No reason you should. But the men who died at the neck, if you remember Peter Weir's movie,
yes,
Gallipoli, the last scene is they're going over there, and they know they're going to be killed because the communication between the ship and the bombardment was all gone wrong. And they were nearly all Light Horsemen. So off he went to Gallipoli and started writing his love letters of an Anzac. I'll just read you Lone Pine, which of course we all remember today. This is his little part at the end of one of his love letters home about Lone Pine. He says, "We linked up with the storming party. The Lone Pine was ours. 100 years hence, the people of Australia will talk with bated breath of the glorious charge. Our 2nd Light Horse Brigade and the 2nd Infantry Brigade held the ridge against all furious counterattacks of the Turks. It was the gallant first who deserved most of the glory." And then he signs off, "Yours till the end of all things." Oh, that's how he signs off his love
letter.
Where
did the name Blue Gum, is it just an Australian connection? Is that
I think he just took it on. He wanted a pen name to write for the Herald. He wrote for other magazines as well, some of them in Britain. And I should say, too, that the Light Horse were not cavalry.
No, that's quite right.
They were mounted infantry.
It wasn't Beersheba. Wasn't that? But the reason that it was so successful was they didn't dismount. They kept going.
That's right. They knew they'd have to do a sort of cavalry charge at Beersheba because we know that because they spent the night before sharpening their bayonets because they didn't have lances, of course. They were light horse, not lances. But they weren't cavalry. And the thing was, you could get to a battle scene or a place where you needed to fight very quickly on horseback. 2/3 of them would go as riflemen, and the other 1/3 would hold 3 horses each, back behind the action. So, just a bit of trivia, but yes, they were not cavalry. So off he goes, and he wrote for, as I said, the Herald and other things. Now, Charles Bean got the job as historian, which he'd wanted. Yes. And he met Charles Bean. He wrote, this is a letter home to his father. He said, "I might be rather angry with Captain Bean because he beat me to the post for the big job, and secondly, because he seems to have ignored our brigade. But I find him an absolutely straight and sincere and honest, and I like him immensely, and I always have." So it's just nice writing, isn't it?
It is.
Now, he was evacuated from Gallipoli in October with enteric fever. I've no idea. What's your medical knowledge?
Limited.
I've no idea what enteric fever is, but he had it. So he was evacuated back. And then the campaign was over, of course. He returned to his unit in the Sinai Desert with the Light Horse in 1916. And he developed a terrific reputation as being a good bloke and very brave and always volunteering for frontline service. And he was at the Battle of Romani with Chevelle, which is another famous victory.
The things he saw.
That we don't often talk about, but it was an incredible Australian victory at Romani. And then he did something interesting. He transferred to the Camel Corps. And not a lot of people know much about the Camel Corps, but the Camel Corps was formed because the Light Horse were finding it difficult. The horses going into the drier areas couldn't cope too well, so they decided to form a Camel Corps, and they put the word out among all the horse regiments, including the British and the Australian Light Horse, that they were looking for volunteers for the Camel Corps. And what every divisional commander did was volunteered all his troublesome and difficult and disobedient soldiers for the Camel Corps. They had, their reputation was incredible, not only in battle, because they went to battle against the Bedouin Arabs who'd been supplied with rifles by the Turks.
Yeah, the Ottomans. Yeah.
And one thing that Oliver Hoge had to do was to lead a troop of camel ears into Bedouin territory and confiscate their weapons. Can you imagine that? But they also had, the Camel Corps had a reputation. Nobody wanted to camp next to them. Because if any of the other regiments or light horses camped near them, they found that all their best gear went missing.
Funny that.
So they had an incredible reputation. He survived all that. He was at Damascus when the Turkish surrendered, and then he took leave at the end and went back to Britain. Now, this is where it gets very sad, because he'd survived all that and written all these wonderful accounts and things that he wrote. He died of the Spanish flu.
As so many did.
Which killed more people than actually World War One, which was horrific in itself. So, you know, he never got back to Australia, to Bonnie Jean, if she was his girlfriend. And his twin sister died just before him back in Australia too. I don't think she died of Spanish flu. But it's tragic to think someone so wonderful who'd done all that stuff and gone through all that, you know, he's buried in the Australian military section at Brookwood Cemetery in London, if anyone wants to visit him. So there he is.
A legacy.
A true Sydney sider, Oliver Hoge.
A light brigade from Glebe.
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, enteric fever, typhoid fever.
Oh,
caused
is that
by
what it is?
Salmonella bacteria. There you go.
Yes.
One to avoid.
Yeah, there were more things killing people at Gallipoli than the Turks or the Ottoman. In the winter, it was mostly frostbite, and of course, dysentery and diarrhea and enteric fever killed just as many as the Turks did, I think.
As we say, lest we forget.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jim.
A pleasure.
Another great Sydney Cider story, the story of Oliver Hoge, Trooper Blue Gum.